Welcome into another episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. My name is Jacob Rudner. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Peter Flaherty. And Peter, we are in a very exciting time of the year. The National Basketball Championship was last night. Tuesday is the day that we're recording this, April 8th. And it is officially the time for baseball to be in the spotlight as far as the college sports ticket goes. Obviously, college softball is still going, but on the men's side, baseball now has all of the focus, basketball out of the way. Let's start off the pod how we always do. How are you? What are some of your thoughts lately? What's going on in the mind of Peter Flaherty?
What's going on in the mind of Peter Flaherty is a question that has a different answer from day to day. But I think that I'm most excited about what you had said. It's now kind of college baseball's time, more or less. In the college sports world. So we've got Omaha creeping up on the horizon. I know we're both excited for that, but in the meantime, we've got kind of a sprint to the finish here with the last handful of weekends, and every series just got that much bigger. And, you know, we've got every game matters, whether it, when it comes to the tournament, figuring out the conference pecking order. So it's a very fun time of year.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I think that the interesting thing here is that when college basketball ends, I find that it typically aligns with the point in the calendar for the baseball season where things really start to get serious. We're really starting to learn about who's who. We're deep enough into the year that the sample size on players is large enough to really get a feel for what they're going to be able to do this season. And there have been some spectacular performances, none more, especially right now, than Arkansas, moved up to number one for the first time this season. It's our third number one team. Texas A&M started out the year in the top spot. Tennessee ruled it from week three through week eight. And now here in week nine, Arkansas is atop the poll. This is a team that ranks among the top 10 in the nation in most offensive categories, particularly and most importantly in scoring. This past weekend against Missouri, they swept and also claimed the most runs scored in an SEC series in program history. They've won more games at this point in the year than they had ever under a Razorbacks coach team. To me, Peter, this is the deepest, best Dave Van Horn squad that we've seen in a very long time, if not ever. And they're going to have a chance to make a lot of noise. So why don't you do me a favor here? Talk to me about this number one team that we have and what kind of pushed them into the top spot. It was a tough decision. University of Texas was right there for us too, but we ultimately settled on the Razorbacks.
Yeah, I think as you pointed out, 33 games in, it's hard to argue against the fact that this is one of, if not the deepest and potentially most talented teams that Coach Van Horn has had in his storied tenure. It's, you know, the book on Arkansas in the last handful of years has been, you know, they can really, really pitch, but the offense lags a little bit behind, and it's done them in the postseason for the last few years. But this season, I mean, the offense, for as good as the rotation is, I mean, the offense is, you can kind of at this point deem it a juggernaut. And it's led by Cam Kojal, who went nuclear over the weekend. He had 13 RBIs. And then Charles Davlon, who is also hitting above 400. He has more home runs, 11, than he does strikeouts this year at 9. It's a very impressive unit on both sides of the baseball. And they jumped up to number one. They had a perfect week, as you said and kind of alluded to. They did an emphatic sweep of Missouri, in which they outscored the Tigers by an eye-popping margin of 51-9 across just 21 innings. And the 51 runs was a new program record for most runs scored in an SEC series. So when it came to them versus Texas at one, and there was discussion and debate because Texas just swept, as anyone that's listening to this probably knows, they swept number four Georgia, picked up its second top five series win this year after taking two of three from LSU a couple of weeks ago. So we were getting in the weeds a little bit when it came to Arkansas versus Texas. But I think what it came down to for us was Arkansas had the number two spot for a couple of weeks now. They were right there. Texas is trending up, was trending up, and still is obviously trending up. But what Arkansas did in an SEC series was, you know, more than take care of business and really not make it a discussion as to whether or not they should be leapfrogged by Texas. And certainly Texas had an argument, but when it came down to it, Arkansas is sitting there at 30-3, 11-1 in the SEC. They've been the number two team for a couple of weeks now. That number two team on a weekend when number one went down did what we had just discussed. So it's like, how can you leapfrog a team like that? For as impressive as Texas has been, as impressive as its resume is, it would kind of be hard to justify Arkansas not just naturally sliding up. And like we always say on our rankings calls, like, this will sort itself out as the season goes on. Texas and Arkansas play each other. You know, you're going to have answers, and we're going to have answers to a lot of these questions as to, you know, who's rightfully the number one team in the land. But this week's call was not without great debate and discussion.
No, it definitely was without, you know, with some great debate and discussion. I think that there are some interesting areas to compare the two teams. First of all, both have been phenomenal in SEC play. They're 11-1, which is tied atop the conference lead. Texas does have the edge in top 25 games. They're 8-1 versus ranked opponents, whereas Arkansas is 7-1. Arkansas has the edge in the record. They're 30-3. Texas is 26-4, basically in the exact same spot. I think one of the biggest things for us last week, you know, I'll just throw in there as well for people's consideration here, is that Texas lost its midweek game. And then that was kind of something that, when you're looking at the very fine details of each resume to promote a team to number one, that mattered. Arkansas beat Grambling in the midweek 7-4. Texas lost 5-3 to in-state Texas State. And it made it, in my mind, you know, an easier decision. It was not easy by any means to promote Arkansas to number one and kind of leave the order that we had between those two teams. You know, like you said, we have tried so far this season to not leapfrog teams that are in similar spots if both swept. You know, it's not in Arkansas's control who they played. And so I think you kind of start to look at those things and it becomes obvious that Arkansas deserved, at least for now, to take on that top spot. But like you pointed out, and I think that it's worth mentioning as well, we are still not early in the season anymore, but we're early in conference play, still about halfway of the league schedule to go. There is a lot of time for things to shake out and kind of align to how they need to align. And so if Texas is the number one team, which they very well could be, I think that we're going to get to a point here pretty soon when we know that that is who belongs in the top spot. I'll add, Texas this week goes to Kentucky. It's a scrappy team. Arkansas has an opportunity to prove itself the way Texas did last week. They take on Georgia in Athens. So I think this week will be kind of the tell-all as far as who deserves to be in that number one spot, or we'll see a little bit more excitement like we've seen a lot this season, and both teams will not take care of business, and we'll have a new number one for the fourth time this year.
Yeah, the SEC slate last week was loaded. It's again loaded. I think just given how talented the conference is going forward on a week-to-week basis, there's going to be at least one top five, top 10 type of series. So it makes for a lot of fun, and it gives us answers to questions that, you know, we're seeking. Or yeah, I think so. That works how I phrase it. I think people get the gist, but Georgia, it got swept, and I think people were kind of clamoring a little bit, you know, why didn't Georgia drop more? It just got swept. Other teams dropped more spots and they got swept. And it matters who you play. Georgia went on the road and took on the number three team. How much can you punish the Bulldogs? I know, again, a sweep optically doesn't look great. It's not a good result by any means. There's really no silver lining to it, but you can only punish a team so much.
Right.
For going on the road and getting beat in a hard fought series against a top five team. But I'd kind of like to see Georgia put some points on the board. They had a really nice sweep of Auburn, a sweep that's aging like fine wine, and they've got a golden opportunity, and it comes in the form of a really tough schedule over the next three weeks, because they got Arkansas midweek against Georgia Tech, at Vandy, at Clemson in a midweek, and then home against Oklahoma. Like, that's a real dandy of a stretch there coming up for the Bulldogs. So I'm excited to see how they perform.
And we've expressed on this podcast, I think several times at this point in the season, that Georgia is one of those teams that I would not be surprised if by the end of the year they had at least a week in the number one spot on our poll. This is a really good team, high octane offense. You know, you go up and down the lineup here, and it's pretty impressive. Rylan Zabowski is looking like somebody who could contend for Player of the Year honors. Robbie Burnett's not trailing him by too much. Nolan McCarthy has really gotten going, hit a couple of big home runs last week, even though it didn't really matter for them. This is a team that's good. And I think kind of one of those groups that, again, We could see them vault up to the number one spot in the rankings. Another team that I thought had the potential to be number one at some point, but now is a lot further away from being able to do that, is Florida State. They dropped from number six to number 13 this week. It was their first big blunder of the season. Got absolutely throttled at home against then number 18 Wake Forest. They won on Friday night 5-4 behind Jamie Arnold's 10 strikeouts in five shutout innings, I should say. And then the next 2 days were just really rough. Wake Forest won 12-0 in seven innings on Saturday, 17-2 in eight innings on Sunday. It was by far the worst weekend of Florida State's season. However, and I'll lead with my thoughts here. I think this is still a really good Florida State team. They have the pieces to be extremely successful. Jamie Arnold still looks like one of, if not the top prospects in this year's draft. Joey Volini has really broken out as somebody who I think could have been an ace on any other staff in that league. Their lineup is potent. They have a couple of contributors that kind of span different areas of recruiting, be them transfers, guys who they've kind of brought up within the program over time, and then some true freshmen who are really dazzling. And so 13th in the poll right now, I'm not so sure is reflective of where I would put Florida State in a power ranking per se. It makes a lot of sense where they're at just based on the exact results, and that's how our poll works. It's week to week and very results oriented rather than projection and kind of what we believe a team will end up becoming. But that being said, let's kind of assess here where Florida State is at. A little bit of a weird spot right now. They're 25-6 overall, 8-4 in the ACC, and they went 2-2 last week. So this is kind of a big rebound opportunity with road games at Florida and Virginia Tech on the slate for this week.
Yeah, kind of a tricky week for the Seminoles. They by no means take on, I guess, you know, I don't think anyone foresaw a midweek game in April with Florida and Florida State kind of not being a huge sort of tilt. It still is from a rivalry standpoint, but Florida's struggles have kind of dimmed down the gravity of the matchup. And Virginia Tech is a team that's right there and knocking on the door of a top 25 spot. They were in it last week. They're still in the mix this week. So it's a difficult week on tap for the Noles. But I'd say last week, obviously a surprising and not ideal result. You know, you come out and you win a really hard fought game on Friday in the series opener, and then you come back and you just get dismantled on back-to-back days, which is really uncharacteristic. So, I mean, I'd say for me, last weekend was more of an endorsement for Wake Forest and a testament to how good it is rather than me being worried about Florida State. I think there were obviously reasons for concern. They got their tail kicked on both sides of the baseball and all aspects of the game on Saturday and Sunday. So there's no silver lining there. But just zooming out and looking at Florida State as a whole, I mean, offensively, there are 5, 6, 7-ish hitters you can feel really comfortable with and reliable when they're in the box. There's depth there. Alex Lodis has been one of the biggest breakout guys in the country, perhaps the biggest breakout guy in the country this year. And then its rotation is like that rotation trio of Jamie Arnold, Joey Volini, and Wes Mendez. When you can trot that out on a weekend to weekend basis, and I know Volini and Mendez both got roughed up, but they're all three of them are having excellent springs. And I think when you have depth like that and it's in the rotation, and then you've got a handful of bullpen arms that you can sprinkle in there, I think for me going forward, the biggest thing for FSU is going to be watching how the bullpen kind of performs and how it's able to figure out. That's been like the one sort of Achilles heel that I've picked up on with the Noles is, you know, who are you going to turn to get outs late in games and slam the door with six outs and two strong innings or close game in the ninth? Like, who do you turn to? So I think that's the biggest thing I'll be watching with them is how the bullpen sorts itself out, because for me that would probably be my biggest concern. But offensively and rotation wise, like, this is still a really high quality club. I'm happy you brought up the point about power rankings, because like you said, they'd be higher than 13 for me. Like, they're a very good team still. So I was more came away impressed with Wake Forest than disappointed and worried about Florida State.
I would say that I'm very much in the same boat. One thing that I will point out is that earlier in the season, we were talking about Florida State in a much more positive light, not that we're not right now. One thing that we said pretty repeatedly was that we were confident that this Florida State team would be able to pitch, which was something that, you know, they were able to do last year, but can really do right now. And your concerns about the bullpen are valid. This group that has not necessarily been very consistent, last week especially, was a challenge. But like you said, the pieces are there in terms of, you know, where you need your best guys to be, you know, from a lineup standpoint. You mentioned Lodice, Max Williams has been really impressive. And then the rotation, you have three guys over the weekends who are standout starters. I would argue that all three of them could probably command a Friday night spot if they weren't teammates. So this is a group that I think is going to end up making a lot of noise. As far as the hosting conversation goes, when we project hosts, we just do it based on our top 16 teams in the top 25, which would mean that Florida State would be host seed number 13. Again, just to reiterate, I would have them a lot higher if it was up to, you know, a power ranking. And you know, even you can tune in to the Field of 64, which we drop on Wednesday mornings over at baseballamerica.com/college. I would imagine that based on projection, if we were going to do it a little bit different than our normal system, we would have them higher than a 13th ranked seed.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And like, they're still in a good spot as it comes to hosting. That's not really a worry at all for me, at least at this point. And then kind of looking ahead for them a little bit, you mentioned they've got a tricky week this week and then a similarly tricky week next week with a midweek against USF and then a series at Virginia. So I'll be looking to see how they bounce back. But I think a series win on the road at VaTech would be beneficial to kind of right the ship quick.
Let's turn our focus to the team that beat them so handily. Wake Forest jumped up from number 18 to number 12. They're 23-10 overall, 9-6, which is much more comfortable in ACC play. I think one thing that stood out to me is that this was really a needed win for the Demon Deacons. They had to do what they did against Florida State to keep themselves in a healthy standing. And granted, this is kind of another one of those situations where, say, the results were different and they didn't get the series, I personally would still be very confident that Wake Forest is in a good position. Probably would have taken them out of that hosting conversation, but with that win, in a much healthier spot as a program. But health, and it's kind of a brutal way to transition to it, health is kind of a problem right now for the Demon Deacons. And that is particularly the case with their starting center fielder, Ethan Conrad, who is going to miss the remainder of the season due to a shoulder injury. It will require surgery. He's going to have the procedure with Dr. Christopher Ahmad. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The team physician of the New York Yankees in New York on Thursday. So he's getting the best care for it. But the reality is that this is the end of Ethan Conrad's college career. This is a guy who I think is in that first round conversation. He certainly was before he got hurt. Now it's kind of a little bit more murky, but a great player and somebody who was a real contributor, hitting .372 with, I believe, 13 extra base hits. For the Demon Deacons this season. He was pacing for career highs in just about every offensive category, despite making the jump from Marist all the way up to the ACC at Wake Forest. This is a big injury for a good team, not one that I don't think they can overcome, but I will throw it to you here for your analysis, a big one no less.
Yeah, and I think anyone who's sitting there and saying, you know, we can just slide so-and-so in and Ethan Conrad's an irreplaceable guy to lose, whether he's at any college program in the country, no matter where he's playing. You can't replace a guy like that. But I will be looking forward to seeing how players step up around him and sort of in the wake of him being out for the year. And last week we got a glimpse of it, kind of dynamic spark plug sophomore Cam Nelson really, really stepped up. They hit him down in the nine hole, and he had a really, really good weekend to kind of get himself going. He's got just 21 at bats this spring, but he's now 10 for 21 with a handful of extra base hits. And he's a good athlete. He can run well. He's got a good arm out in center field. Kind of a high energy guy. There are some fun traits here with Nelson, and no one would be able to replicate what Ethan Conrad does, but I mean, sliding him in there in his spot, and you know, you can sort of be flexible with him and where you hit him. You know, you could lead him off some days. I don't think they end up doing that. I think he profiles, just given the personnel that Wake's got, I think he profiles much better as the everyday eight or nine hole hitter. And you can kind of use him as a second leadoff guy. But again, he can run, he's got a good arm, good athlete, plays kind of with his hair on fire. So I mean, I'm excited to see him perform. He's got some fun tools, and as we saw last weekend, there's plenty of firepower in Wake's lineup, even in addition to Conrad or minus Conrad. Freshman Dalton Wentz had a couple homers and eight RBIs. And then really every hitter kind of joined in on the fun on Saturday and Sunday. And they've got a dynamic 1-2 punch in that rotation with Logan Lunsford and Blake Morningstar. So yeah, Conrad's a huge loss. I think, you know, you'd be lying to yourself if you didn't think he was, but this is still a really talented team. And like you said, they did need last weekend, because what was kind of flying under the radar was if they had lost that series to Florida State and they went down 1-0 on Friday, it would have been their third straight ACC series loss, kind of stuck in a little bit of a rut, but they righted the ship in a huge way. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they ride the momentum they built into a big weekend this against UNC.
Yeah, and you go and you look at the lineup here, that no shortage of contributors still available for Wake. Cade Lewis is having the season of his career. He's batting .455 at the time of us recording this, with 10 home runs and 45 RBIs. Merrick Houston is looking like an early first round pick, .364 with also 10 home runs and 45 RBIs. Jack Winnay has 10 home runs and 36 RBIs. And this is a really good rotation. You know, Logan Lunsford is somebody who you and I have had some really positive conversations about, and it's been a tougher go for him recently, but still, 3.72 ERA and 38.2 innings with 67 strikeouts to 18 walks. Morningstar, who you mentioned, 40 and a third innings, 52 Ks, 14 walks, and a very shiny 2.45 ERA. You go through their bullpen and they've got dudes in there too. A lot of guys, if you go through their statistical breakdown, who have ERAs in that 3.7 or lower range. So the recipe is still there. Obviously, they lose an important player, you know, but I think they should be fine nonetheless. But let's transition here into the bulk of our show. We're going to be talking about kind of the season in review to this point, the halfway point, more or less. You know, we got about just over a month in the regular season before the decisions really start to happen here in college baseball. I'm curious, Peter, what your biggest takeaway has been. And this can be a player, a coach who stood out to you, a team that stood out to you in the first half of the season. What's caught your attention so far? One big thing.
I think it's hard at this point to ignore how unbelievable the SEC has been as a conference. I think when you look at last week's projected field of 64, I believe we had a number of SEC hosts. And then you look at the top 25, and four of the top five are from SEC schools, seven of the top 10 with a handful of others inside the top 25. And circling back to the field of 64, it led all conferences with 11 bids, which is a really, really impressive mark. So no matter where you look, like, there are a number of national championship contenders inside the SEC. And there are, I'd say, five teams right now, potentially six, where if you told me that they would be dogpiling in Omaha come the end of this season, I really wouldn't bat an eye. It's, I'd say, as impressive as it's arguably ever been. There's top-end talent from a draft perspective, both this year and next. And I'm sure 2027, I don't think anyone's really opened the book on the 27 class yet. But just the depth and talent in the SEC has been my biggest standout slash takeaway.
And just to touch up on those numbers here for a second, we have 11 bids out of the SEC. Of those 11, 10 are projected hosts in our latest field of 64. This is a loaded conference. My biggest takeaway is a little bit more granular, and I'm maybe a little bit recency bias here because I just put out a feature story on them. And you can read it over at baseballamerica.com/college. But this is a Kansas team that's really impressed me so far. And you and I have had some interesting conversations about them. And the reason that I'm using them as my focus here for my halfway point takeaway is because they're doing it differently. And that was kind of the theme of the story. This is a team that's been recruited almost entirely out of the non-Division I ranks. They have the nation-leading total in junior college players on their roster right now at 19. They're in the 20s of college players who were recruited as transfers from non-D1s, and they have a total of three true freshmen on their team. 27 and 6 overall right now, a Big 12 leading 9-3 in conference play. This is a Kansas team that's kind of actually pushing into that hosting conversation. They will not be a host because they're ranked 19th in our next field of 64 projection. But if they continue on this track, and this week they have a series at number 24 TCU, you win that, and I think depending on what else goes on in the country And we're looking at a Kansas team that could very well be in the top 16 and therefore a projected host. So this is a Jayhawks group that is very talented, but I think most importantly to them, very different in how they're approaching it and kind of setting the tone, in my opinion, for how teams of their caliber, be it in the Power 5 level, if you're in a Big 12 or you're kind of a middling SEC team, and certainly for mid-major teams, kind of a trendsetter, in my opinion, in terms of being able to kind of show teams that this strategy does in fact work. And so I'm impressed by what I've seen from Kansas, but I think in the bigger picture, why Kansas matters to me right now at this midway point of the season, it's because this is a group that I think a lot of teams can learn something from and potentially be better as a result of maybe trying to take a page from the Kansas book of being successful in the NIL era when you might not have, nation-leading NIL type dollars. So an interesting and very impressive season from the Jayhawks so far. Let's also now talk about some things that we predicted before the season started, and those are our individual awards. If you want to check out what we posted on January 17th, you got to look up College Baseball Player of the Year award predictions for 2025, again, over at baseballamerica.com/college. We went through all of the major Power Four conferences and assigned player, pitcher, and freshman of the year. We did the same for the national award scene. And at this point in the year, Peter, I think it's probably about time for us to go through the list again and talk about what we predicted, where those guys now stand in the national scene, whether or not they're still tracking towards the awards that we predicted them to win before the season. And in the event that they are not on that track still at this point, I would like for us to replace them with a new pick. And so let's just start at the natural spot, which is National Player of the Year. Prior to the season, we went with the prediction that I think everybody went with, which was Jace LaViolette. It's been a rough go for LaViolette. It's been better recently, and that's certainly the same for his Texas A&M squad, was ranked preseason number one. Now they're not ranked at all. They're 3-9 in the conference and looking to kind of battle back after a win over then number one, Tennessee. That was a huge series win for the Aggies, who are still kind of in that very peripheral but still possible postseason conversation. Who is your player of the year? I would assume, and it still could be, but I would assume it is not Jace LaViolette.
No, it is not Jace. He's had a rough go of it. He's actually, you know what? I think that's actually rather harsh to say about him at this point. He had a slow start. He's really picked it up recently. I think he's hitting over 400 since March 15th. So just about the last month or so. So it's been positive to see him pick it up. He had another good series against Tennessee. So he's trending in the right direction. He still isn't really, at least for me, fit in the 1-1 conversation, at least right now from a draft standpoint. But I've been impressed with his resolve and mental strength and riding the ship when it easily could have snowballed. But Jace LaViolette monologue kind of aside, it's an interesting debate because I'm kind of sitting here looking at a handful of hitters. You know, you've got the Georgia duo of Robbie Burnett and Ryland Zabarowski. Burnett's 49 RBIs rank fifth nationally, actually tied for fifth nationally with Ryland Zabarowski. His 15 home runs rank second nationally.
This is tough. I like Alex Lodice has a great argument. He's sitting here hitting over 460 in the ACC, and he's been excellent with 10 home runs or 11 home runs. Cade Lewis in a similar breath. So, I mean, I think right now it'd be kind of hard to not say Alex Lodice. I'm curious where you're at, but I'd probably go with Lodice.
So I'm going to preface what I'm going to say with this. We actually did not discuss who we were going to pick prior to the show. And I think that that keeps it kind of interesting because it allows people to see whether or not we're just naturally on the same page. And in this case, we're one for one. I actually have written down on my paper right next to me, Alex Lodice as my National Player of the Year. Reason being, the statistics are unbelievable. Through 31 games, 462 batting average. He's got 12 home runs, 40 RBIs, 10 doubles, 3 triples. He has walked 11 times to 30 strikeouts. It's probably your one blemish. 6 stolen bases. But this is a guy who's also hit for the cycle. He's scored 38 runs. He's playing a premium position for Florida State right now. It's going to be really hard. And we had a conversation about Ryland Zabarowski on our last podcast or two podcasts ago, where we basically said it's at a certain point, there does become an element of the National Player of the Year conversation, which is just purely what have you done? I think the brand name kind of carries some guys towards that conversation through the first half of the season. But you get to this point where we're 30 plus games in for a lot of teams And I think it gets hard to argue when somebody's batting closer to 500 than they are 400, have double-digit home runs, 40 RBIs, and again, are kind of in that national conversation in just about every statistical category. So for me at this juncture, I think it has to be Alex Lodis, considering the body of work. Like you mentioned, I think that there are a lot of other guys who you could very reasonably slot into that spot. But for me at this stage, again, it has to be Lodis.
Hiring has changed. When we have an opening, we need a way to organize what quickly becomes a very complicated process. That's why we need Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One of the things I love about Indeed is how it makes hiring so fast, because it organizes the candidates and allows me to set up every step of the process right within Indeed's website. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no reason to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Let's keep going down the list here and keep it rolling. We've got our National Pitcher of the Year. We gave that award to Jamie Arnold. I think that you probably still have an argument to keep him in that spot. I also would not argue with you if you changed your pick, just to give people a picture of what Arnold has done. 34 and a third innings. He did miss some time due to what Florida State called an illness. He's got a 2.62 ERA, 48 strikeouts to 13 walks. Not necessarily the same impressive outputs that I think maybe some people were expecting, but you read those numbers out loud and it's pretty hard to argue with what he's done. I will point out though, that purely by the numbers, he's not the best pitcher even on that staff. That belongs to Joey Volini, 45.2 innings, 2.56 ERA, 66 strikeouts to 11 walks. So if we're being honest here, I don't know that you can stick with Jamie Arnold, because the reality is that there's a pitcher on his very staff that I think has a better case at this stage.
Yeah. That's a fact. And then two, for these national awards and conference awards, it's largely based just on back of the baseball card numbers type stuff. So this isn't at all taken into account draft stock. So, I mean, for me, I don't know how you cannot have Liam Doyle be the National Pitcher of the Year, at least at this point. Through 42 and two thirds inning, he's notched 81 strikeouts to just 14 walks with a 2.53 ERA. Everyone, you know, they've mentioned the rocket ship of his fastball that's up to 97, 98 with a ton of life, especially late in the zone. And then he supplements it with this sort of cut slider hybrid, and then a really intriguing and interesting split changeup that's really flash. So stuff analysis, very brief stuff analysis aside, it's hard to argue against Liam Doyle at this juncture.
So I hear you and I agree with you, but this is going to be one of those opportunities where I take the opportunity to do a little bit of projecting here. Who does not necessarily have the exact same firepower in the numbers, but certainly close enough where I don't feel bad about making this pick. I'm going to jump over to LSU and I'm going to go with their lefty, Cade Anderson. The numbers are not like you would think based on the hype that Liam Doyle has garnered, and rightfully so far this season, that there would be a massive blowout in these categories, but it's really not. I'm going to go line by line here. 42 and two thirds innings for Liam Doyle, 47 and a third for Cade Anderson. Liam Doyle has a 2.53 ERA. Anderson, after throwing a complete game shutout this past week, has a 2.85. Strikeouts, 81 for Mr. Doyle and 75 for Cade Anderson. I think, interestingly, they're both kind of in the same pocket as far as walks go. 14 for Doyle, 12 for Anderson. Doyle's fantastic. One of the things that concerned me with making Doyle as my pick is that we have seen some inconsistency emerge ever since conference play started. And granted, there have been some amazing days. What he did against Texas A&M, throwing 6 no-hit innings and participating in that combined 7-inning no-hitter, is huge. And so that's obviously a very good result against a conference foe. However, I do think it's worth mention at this point in the season that if he continues to have kind of a shaky performance throughout the rest of conference play, the door is open for somebody like Cade Anderson, who has been nails, especially recently, with that 9-inning, you know, complete game shutout with a career high 14 strikeouts. Everything is rolling for Cade Anderson. So I'm gonna kind of take the momentum here as opposed to the results to date and project out for Cade Anderson.
It's a great pick. He was the other name I had written down, and for all the reasons that you mentioned. So another guy that's a slam dunk first rounder in my mind from a draft standpoint, and ultra, ultra talented from the left side.
Let's jump over to National Freshman of the Year. Preseason, we went with a very popular pick. We went with Rintaro Sasaki, the Japanese phenom over at Stanford, their first baseman. I think that you could certainly make an argument of all the three guys that we just talked about to go into that number one, into that spot and stay there. I do think Rintaro has the best case. I personally will not be sticking with him, but I'm curious what you're going to do.
Yeah, I won't be sticking with him either. So when looking at the National Freshman of the Year race, I think it's pretty tight. I mean, there are 3 to 4 names that really stood out to me when kind of digging in the weeds a little bit. The main three were Derek Curiel, LSU outfielder, Jake Hanley, first baseman at Indiana, and Sawyer Strawsnyder, an outfielder at TCU. And for as well as Curiel's been swinging it, and as well as Hanley's been swinging it, especially Curiel in the SEC hasn't really missed a beat since conference play has begun. I'm going to go with Strawsnyder at TCU. He actually started off pretty slow, but since he has just been on a torrid pace. He's hitting over 370 with 8 doubles, 5 triples, 7 home runs, and 36 RBIs. It's a really fun tool set. He can run well. He's a plus runner when underway. He's got big time arm strength in a corner outfield spot. And then from a hitting perspective, his swing can get a little bit long, which leads to miss at times, but there's plus power in there, and he's just a really good athlete and moves super well in the box. So I'm going to go with Strawsnyder.
Okay. Great pick, and was one of my 2 at the top. One person who you actually didn't mention is actually going to be my selection. I have to go because I just have been so impressed with what he's been able to do. Louisville freshman first baseman Tague Davis has been excellent through 29 games this season. He's batting 316, 12 home runs, which is a big number for a true freshman, 32 RBIs. He's walked 18 times to 26 strikeouts, which is a pretty good breakdown for somebody his age. 3 doubles. He trails the extra base hit race with Sawyer Strawsnyder, who's also hitting 370. Is part of this pick to kind of keep it different from what you're doing? Yes. But I really do like what Tague Davis has been able to do this year. He's shown off a lot of power. We knew that was going to be something that he had in his arsenal. We saw him kind of display that very early on in the season. Carlos Collazo and I were in Arlington for opening weekend when they played at Globe Life, and he was impressive there. And that hasn't really slowed down. So maybe not as strong a resume right now as Strawsnyder has, but Tague Davis, I think, is very much in that same conversation of guys who you just mentioned.
Hey, I'm happy you're giving him some love, and you touched on him well. Like, big league body, comfortably plus raw power, potentially double plus raw, and it's played as plus power in game. So he's had a really excellent season so far, and I think as we were talking through it a little bit, there is every season, but there are a number of freshmen to kind of, you know, be really excited about going forward, and that we'll be able to watch in 26 and 27.
Yeah, just to rattle off a few of the other ones, Noah Franco, Strawsnyder's teammate at TCU, has done a really good job on both sides of the field. He's also somebody who I would have in that conversation. Jake Hanley over at Indiana has been excellent through 30 appearances so far this season. And I will also just point out here, because it always is worth mention, and I think this sometimes gets overlooked, but there have been some excellent freshman performances at the mid-major level. Ryan Luig at Dayton has been excellent. Tyler Lichtenberg, I hope I pronounced that right, at App State has been great. Gabe Miranda at Northern Kentucky has been excellent, and the list does go on. So a really exciting freshman crop across the country this year, which will certainly make for some good baseball over the next couple of years. Let's jump into our conference awards. One thing that I will preface the conference awards with, if there is overlap with a national award, there's really not much to talk about. So that will happen a couple times here. But let's start with the SEC Player of the Year. We picked Alex Lodice as our guy for the national award. So we do need to pick a new player, unless you want to stick with Jace. Over Player of the Year in the SEC, who do you got?
Well, I think we want to start with the ACC, given the love to Alex Lodice.
Let's start with the ACC.
I'll stick with Alex Lodice as Player of the Year. I think that's hard to argue against. I mean, Cade Lewis is also right in that conversation, but still give the edge to Lodice.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think as a rule of thumb here, if we're picking you for a national award, probably going to pick you for the conference award as well. ACC Pitcher of the Year is real interesting to me because you have a number of players here who are very solid contenders for that. It still includes Jamie Arnold, who was our pick before the season started. We've mentioned a couple of guys who have been excellent. Logan Lunsford, somebody, Blake Morningstar, somebody, Joey Volini is probably in that conversation. And there are a lot of others. I mean, you got Aiden Canock in that conference, who's looking very good. Give me your ACC pick for pitcher.
Man, I think to your point, and we briefly touched on it when talking about Florida State, I'd probably go with Joey Volini at this point. I think just from a number standpoint, it's really hard to argue against what he's done. And as you said, it's 66 Ks to 11 walks across 45 and two thirds innings with a 2.56 ERA. Just he's been nails for him and has really stepped up. I think Jake Knapp from North Carolina is also sort of underratedly in that conversation, perhaps not underrated, you know, through seven starts of his own and 45 and two thirds innings. He's got a 1.58 ERA with 45 Ks to just seven walks. So there's some impressive pitching depth as it pertains to the annual award in the ACC, but I would tend to lean Volini just given the volume of strikeouts.
No extra analysis from me. I was going to go with Joey Volini for the ACC. I'm sticking with it. Rintaro, obviously national player of the year or freshman of the year, excuse me, preseason. He got the nod as freshman of the year in the ACC for us as well. Who is your pick for that? Obviously, if you'd like to keep Rintaro, be my guest.
I'll probably stray away from Rintaro, even just given the flashes he's shown at times. But I might go with, man, this one's tough too, because Tig Davis has a great argument. I'm kind of wrestling between Tig Davis, Miles Bailey, and then also Tatum Marsh at Stanford. And I guess for... Man, that's it. That's going to be tough when it comes down to it. I'll go with Tage Davis. I think, and you know, just projecting on the numbers a little bit, which is kind of a unique exercise given, you know, what we do on a week-to-week basis and then the draft podcast, which isn't really, you know, partially the numbers are involved, but it's more just looking at a guy and how he grades out from a tool standpoint. And then also Alex Hernandez at the 11th hour. I'm actually going to go with Alex Hernandez from Georgia Tech. He's sitting over 320 right now, 9 home runs, 41 RBIs. Will be a prominent draft eligible sophomore next year in 2026. I'll go with Hernandez. He kind of popped in my head at the 11th hour.
Yeah, no, all those guys you just mentioned are very enticing. I have to stick with Davis because I put him in the national freshman of the year category. I've already explained that. Let's move over to the SEC. I will start this by saying our SEC pitchers of the year are going to stay the same. We both picked SEC guys for the national awards. Liam Doyle and Cade Anderson will be both of our picks. Peter's Doyle, mine Anderson. Who is your SEC player of the year? It was Lavoillette before the season for us.
Yeah, it's not going to be Jace. I'm down to the two Georgia boys with Rylan Zaborowski and Robbie Burnett. And I'm going to give the edge to Zaborowski. He's hitting 412, 14 homers, 49 RBIs. He's trailing Burnett by one homer. They're tied in RBIs, but he's got Burnett beat. From a batting average standpoint, by I believe it's 76 points, if my math's correct, if my quick math is correct. So I'll go with Zaborowski. Justin LeBron,
our projected top college player in the 2026 class and top player in general in the 2026 class, is also in that conversation, though. But I'll go with Zaborowski.
Yes, he, Justin LeBron, certainly is in that conversation. But given the hype that I have emphatically given out on this podcast, which other fan bases have made sure to let me know they don't like, I have to pick Rylan Zaborowski. He has been outstanding. You already went over the stats. I don't need to give you much more. Let's move over to SEC Freshman of the Year. We picked Brody Johnston, the third baseman from Vanderbilt, before the season. You could very much, probably more than anybody so far, argue that he deserves to stay in that spot. I have one other person who I'd like to mention, but why don't you give me your pick first?
Got to be Derek Curiel from LSU, and it's the same reason he's in the national conversation, hitting 390, 17 extra base hits, 28 RBIs, 32 walks to 25 Ks. The bat-to-ball ability and the hit ability with Curiel has been pretty remarkable to this point. So for me, it's his to lose.
So I'm actually going to throw in two into the hat because that was not who I thought you were going to say. But Levi Clark over at Tennessee has been outstanding so far this season. In his true freshman season, he's made 26 appearances. But it's not who I'm going with, Peter. I'm going with shortstop Tyler Bell, the second round pick of the Tampa Bay Rays over at Kentucky. He decided to go to school, and boy, has that looked like a good decision through, excuse me here. Let's see how many games so far. I don't know why this isn't working now. 29 games so far this season. He's batting .333 with 5 home runs, 12 doubles. I believe he reached base in Kentucky's first 24 games of the season, which is very impressive. We knew that Tyler Bell was going to be an advanced freshman before the season began. He's looked the part, certainly, so far this season. That completes the SEC. Let's go over to the Big 12. Preseason player of the year in the Big 12 was Nolan Schubart over at Oklahoma State. He has been very solid. The power is real. Something tells me you're not sticking with that pick, though.
No, I'm not going to stick with Schubart. And kind of in a change of pace, I'll let you lead it off. I'm kind of curious to see in what direction you go with Big 12 Player of the Year.
That is a very good question. I had a couple candidates listed out here. And if my computer will be so kind as to load, I will tell you about them. Let's see here. Yes, my pick so far for Big 12 Player of the Year is none other than Maximus Martin over at Kansas State. This was a tough one. I had Brandon Compton also very much on my list right here. There are several players in this conference who have been very impressive so far this season, but Martin kind of above the rest. He's hitting .364, 9 doubles. He's got 12 home runs, 28 strikeouts to 13 walks. We're looking at a player who has had some massive moments so far this season. And I just go back to the back of the baseball card, like you kind of put it, in terms of deciding who belongs where in each of these awards. And his numbers are kind of just too good for me to argue with. So at this juncture, I'm going with Nolan Schubart. I'm going with Maximus Martin.
I will not be going with Nolan Schubart. I will be going with Brady Ballinger from Kansas. He's hitting .408.
Yes.
With 10 doubles, 12 home runs, 38 RBIs, 39 walks to just 23 strikeouts, plus hitter through and through with power to boot. He's produced at a really impressive clip and has been the centerpiece of Kansas's lineup all season. And I have a feeling if they were to make a run here in June, he'll also be the centerpiece of that. So it's Ballinger. I also had Max Martin written down. And I also had Sawyer Strassnyder written down, who I'll stick with for freshman of the year, because I mean, the numbers have been just outstanding as I hit on it in the national segment. So a fun race to monitor over in the Big 12 as well.
Yeah. And I'll just add Ballinger was my number two for that award. Let me hear your pitcher for the Big 12.
I'll go with Antoine John, Gene, John, who knows? I'll go with Antoine John from Houston. Veteran lefty, 64 Ks to just 15 walks in 36 and a third innings. He's been really impressive for the Cougs. He's been kind of their go-to arm. And then Tommy Lepore from TCU is another guy that I have heavily considered. He's fared really well as the anchor of the rotation, big-time arm strength, fastball up to 98-99 in a conference-leading 2.62 ERA among all who qualify.
You know, it's sometimes it just works out so beautifully, Peter. Those are the exact two guys I had written down. You went with John. That was probably who I was going to pick. But just for the sake of the conversation here, and you already kind of highlighted him, so I don't need to do it again, but Tommy Lepore has been fantastic. I would lean toward Antoine John, just again, somebody who's been absolutely fantastic. And I will add as well, just for those of you who are more of the on the draft side listening to this podcast, somebody to keep an eye on our senior sign list. I know we were having a conversation about that, you know, over at Baseball America as we prep out for the draft in a couple months from now. Certainly still the case. He has looked really, really good. Freshman of the year in the Big 12, we picked Mason Russell, the lefty from Arizona, before the season. Who do you got now?
I've got Sawyer Strawsnyder. He's the guy I've talked about a few times in this segment. So I'm going to stick with Strawsnyder.
And I would agree. We're sticking with Strawsnyder there. That brings us to our final conference, the Big 10. Player of the year. And you and I were talking about this before the show started. This will probably be the spot where we end up sticking with some guys. Devin Taylor, the outfielder at Indiana, was our player of the year. I will just preface this by saying he is still my player of the year.
So Devin Taylor's got an argument for it, and he'll be in the race until the end. I'm actually going to go with his teammate and fellow outfielder, Corbin Dickerson, who has been one of the more popular, I'd say, draft helium names this season. He's hitting 373 with 14 homers and 54 RBIs, just a really dynamic tool set. He's been able to flash it on a regular basis this spring. So Devin Taylor's got an argument, but I mean, I've got to roll with Dickerson at this point.
Yeah, and I will add as well, he's actually putting up some historic numbers. And if I had to change my pick, that would be who it would go to. Big Ten pitcher of the year, we went with Michigan State lefty Joseph Zirwa before the season. I will say here again before this segment, I'm going to stick with it. I really like what Zirwa's been able to do. There are some other candidates, but this is a guy who I've kind of fallen in love with, so to speak, as the season's gone on.
Yeah, I'll also be sticking with Jirwa. I think the main guy that's knocking on the door from an awards perspective is Cade Obermueller from the University of Iowa. 2.5 ERA with 65 Ks, which is a conference leading 65 Ks at that, to just 14 walks and 46 and a 2/3 innings. Another really uncomfortable attack angle, especially against left-handed hitters. Really impressive fastball slider combo. So it's kind of between Obermueller and Jirwa. I'm going to stick with Jirwa, though.
Yeah, and I'll just add on Jirwa, 47.2 innings so far this season, 1.89 ERA, which is the best in the conference. That was the stat that really did it for me. Our last spot is Big Ten Freshman of the Year. We went with another Indiana boy. Hogan Denny was our pick. We were very impressed by him going into the season. I'm curious if you've stayed there.
I won't be sticking with Hogan Denny. He's shown flashes at times. When given the start at Indiana, but we were close with Taylor and Denny. We were on the right team, but we just picked the wrong player potentially. So I'm going to go with Jake Hanley, guy that's in the National Freshman of the Year conversation, hitting almost 400 with 7 doubles and 7 homers. He's been the leading hitter of Indiana. He's been ultra, ultra impressive. So it'd be hard to not give it to him.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I will, however, just throw out there for the sake of conversation that Wylan Moss, the freshman pitcher at UCLA, only 28 and a third innings, but he's got a 2.54 ERA, 33 strikeouts to 7 walks so far this season. Do I think he's the front runner for this award? No, I don't. Would he be my pick? No, I would actually agree with Peter's pick here, but you know, we've kind of made a habit here of pointing out some of the guys who could be in the conversation, and he is a sneaky one that I would certainly keep an eye on. So that is our full rundown of our preseason awards and how we would adjust them over to the midseason. If you want more analysis on those and how we kind of thought about each of our picks, we will be putting out a piece tomorrow. This is Wednesday, April 9th, at some point in the morning with our picks and kind of explaining who we settled on. In this podcast, we had some disagreements on some of the areas, but for this written piece that'll come out in about 24 hours, we are going to settle on one player for each spot. Peter and I will come to a consensus. We will fight to get our picks into the final rankings for midseason players of the year across conferences and nationally. And with that, Peter, it brings us to our final segments of the show. This one has been my favorite and far from yours. It's time for Picks to Click. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, Picks to Click is very simple. Each week, Peter and I go back and forth. We pick one hitter or one pitcher each. It has to be the same. So this week we'll be picking pitchers. And whoever has the best week of our picks scores for our team a point. It has been ugly through the first half of the season. I won the first half 6 correct picks to 1. A little lopsided, Peter. And because of the lopsided nature of the first half of Picks to Click, we have reformatted the segment and we are going first half, second half. So I am your first half champion, kind of minor league baseball championship style, if you will. And now we will start a clean slate. So it is 0-0 from now through the end of the regular season. I'm sure we'll start a postseason section of this as well. Who is your first pick to click of the brand new second half 0-0 score? You're back in the race for Picks to Click.
Jeez, Louise. Well, I will say it was very kind of you to make this a first half, second half deal. And I think we have the benefit of this being the first year of the Picks to Click segment. So we can kind of make the rules as we go along, but
yes,
it did get to a point where we needed a refresher, and that where it seemed to work out well. So my first pick of the second half of Picks to Click, redundancy with the picks there, but I'm going to select Miles Patton, left-hander from Texas A&M. He's been really impressive for the Aggies all season, just as really everyone has been in the rotation, but through 8 starts, 3.92 ERA with 47 Ks to just 8 walks through 43 2/3 innings. From a draft perspective, really advanced strike thrower with stuff to boot, fastball up to 93 with some ride and run through the zone. And it's a pitch he pairs with a slider and changeup, both of which generate swings and misses. So I think he's going to ride the wave of momentum that the Aggies built last weekend. He threw the ball well against Tennessee, allowed 3 earned runs across 6 strong innings. And I think he's going to turn in another quality start this weekend against South Carolina.
And I'm going to put Louisville righty Patrick Forbes on my team. Interestingly, Patrick Forbes was a guy who we kind of fell in love with pretty quick, made a massive jump over 170 spots in our draft rankings. He's now in the top 20 after being outside the top 150 to start the season. And that was in large part due to his work in non-con play, and actually really including his first start of conference play. You go through March 14th when he threw 4 innings against North Carolina, and he had a 2.37 ERA that has since ballooned to 4.24. His last 3 starts have not been so kind. 6 innings apiece against Virginia Tech and Cal, but he gave up 5 earned runs in each. And then most recently, a reasonably underwhelming 3 1/3 inning start against Boston College, in which he allowed 3 earned runs, walked 3, struck out 4, but a guy who we continue to be impressed with. So I'm betting on the bounce back this week. I think that this will be the week that kind of realigns everything for Patrick Forbes. And then just to give kind of the breakdown of who Patrick Forbes is, huge fastball that really kind of impressed us. It kind of took on a new shape this season. It's got a lot of ride through the zone, powerful pitch that's been up to, I believe, 99 miles per hour so far this season. He pairs it with a slider that's been pretty wipeout. Gets a lot of swings and misses on that pitch. And a guy who, again, you know, has emerged as a potential first-round pick after looking like somebody who was going to be more of a, you know, 3-5-round selection earlier on in the season, now has really made a name for himself. So those are the picks to click. Lefty, Miles Patton for Peter, for myself. Righty, Patrick Forbes. Peter looking for a much better start after going 1-6 in the first half. Now just looking to score. Peter, if you get ahead of me here, that'll be kind of a monumental moment in
I don't even know if it's mathematically possible. It might be. I think they're like, yeah, I don't even know if it's mathematically possible, but
You got work to do.
We got the attitude in the clubhouse is good. We're on to the second half of the season. We've kind of flushed the first half that was, and you know, we've recentered ourselves a little bit.
Well, that brings us to our final thoughts, Peter, the way we end our shows every single week. I will, before allowing you to give your final thoughts, say this. If you want our college baseball content, the best stuff that you can get in the whole land, head on over to collegebaseball.com/college. We're putting out college content just about every single day. I mentioned it earlier in the show, but I've got a feature up right now about the University of Kansas and their very fascinating recruiting process that you should give a read. Carlos Collazo did a really interesting analysis of stuff changes across the college baseball landscape, which is fantastic, and you should give that a read as well. Peter comes out with games to watch every week. You should check that out. So again, tons of college content. Peter, to wrap up this episode, what is your final thought?
Yeah, my final thought is going to be a doubleheader I will be following as best I can today, Tuesday, April 8th, and it's between the Yeshiva University Maccabees and the Lehman College Lightning down in New York. Yeshiva has lost 99 games in a row, and Lehman has lost 42 games in a row. Someone has to win a baseball game today. I don't know who it's going to be. I have no intel on it. I think it's one of the more underrated and fascinating baseball stories out there. So I will be following intently. I have no clue how I'm going to follow this game. I don't really know if there's a StatCast stat website. A live stream would be a very pleasant surprise. But someone's going to win a baseball game today, whether it's Yeshiva or Lehman, and they're going to be feeling really good. So I'm very excited to see how this unfolds.
Yeah, no, some Division III excitement going on tonight. I will add this, and I just looked it up as rapidly as I could while you were talking. You can actually watch the game. If you head on over to Yeshiva University's baseball schedule and you scroll down to the doubleheader against Lehman College today, April 8th, there are two links to watch both of those games. Whether or not they'll yield a stream, I couldn't even tell you. But you should check it out for a little piece of history. Kind of an interesting, weird Division III series going on in New York today. So that's an awesome takeaway. Mine is going to be on the D1 side, just because I have been impressed with this group and I have used my final thought to highlight a team that I think might not be getting enough attention. If you checked out our Field of 64 last week, you almost certainly noticed that the American Conference was getting quite a bit of love. I believe we had three teams from that league in the Field of 64 last week. It could look very similar this week. And one of those teams was South Florida under Mitch Hanna's. They're 19-10 overall, 7-2 against conference foes. They were not able to pull off a sweep last week, which is kind of a bummer, against Memphis, but they did do really well. They won 2 of 3 over there, 7-2 again overall. This is a South Florida team that is going to contend for the American, in my opinion, a really loaded conference. But I wanted to give the shout out to Mitch Hanna's. Winning has kind of followed wherever he's gone. And that is certainly the case in Tampa this season with the Bulls. They look awesome and like a postseason team. So that is my final thought for the Week 9 College Baseball Podcast. Again, I will remind everybody, head on over to baseballamerica.com/college if you want all of our college content. Again, that is coming out daily at this point in the season. There's lots to read about and digest with this very exciting and constantly changing college baseball season. So for this episode of the podcast, my name is Jacob Rudner. I'm joined by Peter Flaherty as always, and we will see you in Week 10.